So these are things that we're doing now to help turn the corner. But what you realize is that you can keep iterating and moving, but when you're smaller, you can solve problems quickly because the problems you have are generally something that can be solved quickly. When you grow, the challenges become not overnight fixes.
Welcome to the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Doust. Since 2007, Quiet Light Brokerage has been helping thousands of online entrepreneurs realize their dream of buying and selling online businesses. And now, we're bringing all the knowledge our team has acquired straight to you. No matter your niche or industry, these lessons, tips, and strategies will help you build, grow, acquire, or sell your online businesses better. And now, here's Joe and Mark.
So it amazes me, Mark, the people that we meet at these different events and that are just laid back, casual, seem like just good guys you want to go hunting or fishing with. Not that I hunt or fish. It's been a long time. I live in a lake, but I haven't gone fishing for a while or I haven't caught anything for a while. Anyway, Dustin Ray strikes me as one of those people. I met him at Rhodium a few years back, totally laid back. I think you introduced him to me and surprised me later when you start talking about the numbers and what this guy's doing and so humble yet doing such incredible numbers. You had a chance to have him on the podcast recently.
Yeah, I did. And Dustin is one of those guys whenever he and I talk on the phone and, you know, it's not as frequently as maybe I would like, but whenever we talk, it ends up being like an hour and a half conversation. Rest assured, this is not an hour and a half long podcast, but it could have been because he's got a ton of information. His background's fascinating. He started out in the music industry promoting some of the biggest artists that we know. When he was telling me that when he was driving down through Las Vegas and seeing some of the artists up on the board that are coming in, I mean, he knows who's behind these things. This was his industry for a long time, but he decided to leave that industry and was really drawn to the internet world and got his start with a company that was not doing that great at the time. He didn't know it at the time, And he's now a partner of that company. And really under his guidance and some of the other work his team has done, they've grown it into an eight-figure company relatively quickly. And really just through being able to modify their funnels, understand better customer acquisition strategies, and get that conversion rate as high as it can, and really making a product that works well for his customers. Really cool discussion about modifying those funnels, modifying your customer acquisition process. But also we touched on, and I want to have him back on again. I say this to a lot of guests, but I definitely want to have him back on again about some of the challenges as well of scaling a team when you go from this, you know, 1 million in revenue up to, you know, 5 million in revenue up to 10 million in revenue. And then beyond that as well, there's always these natural choke points where it's not as easy to scale that team. You know, and they've been going through that. They've been going through some of those growing pains, but doing it really, really well. So we talk about a little bit of that as well in this episode.
Well, Dustin's much more interesting than the both of us. So let's jump right to the podcast.
Sounds great. All right, Dustin. Hey, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, Mark.
I know you're a loyal listener. Like, you don't miss a single episode of this thing. So you know what we do. We know that we'd like you to introduce yourself. Why don't you give just kind of a quick background on yourself?
Sure. My name is Dustin Ray, and I'm a co-owner and at inkfile.com. We're an incorporation service that services all 50 states. We help people form LLCs and corporations. We've been in business for a little over 15 years now, and we've helped over 150,000 entrepreneurs get their business launched.
Yeah, you didn't start in this, though. I mean, this is you have a background beyond that. And you, full disclosure, you and I met at Rhodium. What was it? 3 years ago now, I think.
Yeah.
And we talked over dinner a little bit, and you shared some of your background. You have a background in the music industry as well.
That's right. So, kind of accidentally fell into the tech space, I guess you could say. So I grew up playing sports, went to school, and kind of grew up in the music scene, and that meant, you know, recording stuff with friends and then throwing parties and club promoting and working at eventually a management company and record label. And then I went over and launched the hip hop division for music marketing nationally for Monster Energy Corporation. So I was in the music business for about 10 years. And it was ironic that we're here talking on a podcast because literally as I'm in the music business, I kind of stumbled upon entrepreneurship and a podcast about it. And that was kind of how I got introduced to the whole tech space. And when I was listening to, you know, just these different entrepreneurs, you know, I didn't have any friends around me in the tech space. I didn't grow up coding. I'm not a coder. I'm not a technical person. So it was very much like an outer space experience, right? When someone mentioned something tech. And so for me, it opened up a whole new world for me and started speaking to every existence in my body, you know, about it. I love the fact that it was flexible. You know, it's not like a physical store that you're at every single day. You need your laptop, you need your phone, you can be anywhere in the world. So I like that flexibility, and I like the fact that there wasn't a ceiling, right? As long as you can build something scalable, you can take it as far as you want. And then the other thing, of course, that's intriguing was, I mean, the value creation, right? It was like you would read an article and it was like, how in the world does somebody build something in 18 months and then they're selling it or it's getting acquired for millions of dollars? Like, how is that even possible? You know, that was like a foreign concept to me. I thought, you know, you got to work hard, put in the time, be a savvy investor. And when you have a lot of white hair, then you have your money. So that was kind of how I got introduced to the tech space. And then I'll let you take it from there, so I'm not rambling on, but that was my introduction into the tech space. And then I found my way in through Inkfile.
Cool. Yeah. And I want to get into that, but just make a quick observation. And something I've noticed over the years is that people who come from outside of the tech world, depending on your background, it's fascinating to watch what you're able to bring in. The music industry and the entertainment industry in general, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure this is accurate, crazy competitive space, right? You got to be top of your game if you're going to be promoting artists. And I mean, everybody wants to be a music star of some sort. So if you're in that promotions game, you got to be on top of your game there, right? I mean, yeah.
You know, just like a lot of businesses, I mean, competition is fierce. You know, you got a singer or a rapper or something on every corner. And just like really in any other business, it's how are you going to stand out? You know, how are you going to break through? It's not always just talent, right? That's where it starts. But it's really the perseverance that really is what separates an entrepreneur, a musician, an artist, a rapper, you know, from the next. So, yeah, it's completely, you know, and it's not a pretty industry either. I mean, you know, you hear some of the horror stories. I mean, you got to fight and claw your way to just get the money that's even owed to you. You know, it's not like we have this automatic draft where if you owe me, it's going to be paid, or this automated payments like we do in the tech space, right? Where it's automatically an invoice comes in and it's paid. I mean, you know, in the music industry, you know, you have to have some fight in you. You have to know how to navigate and fight your way through to survive. And, you know, that does translate into any business, but in the tech space too. I mean, super competitive. Anybody can come in and make you either irrelevant with new technology, or they can come in with more resources and push you out. So, you know, you still have to have that same perseverance and fight.
That's fantastic. I have a story to tell, but I'm not going to tell it right now. Maybe you and I can talk about this another time, or anyone that's listening, if you meet up with me at a conference, I'll tell you the story about the time I sat on an airplane and sat next to a multiple gold album recording artist who was sitting back in coach and had made millions and millions of dollars in the music industry and had almost none of it to his name because of managers and stuff like that that were taking the money from him. Fascinating conversation. Spoiler alert, he was crying by the end of the conversation. So fun story, but we would definitely go down a rabbit hole. I don't want to get into right now. I want to talk about Inkfile. I want to talk about kind of your background there, how you got into it, and also the scalability and some of the challenges that come along with scaling a business like you have with Inkfile. So that's about 15 years old. How did you get into Inkfile in the first place?
So I've been with Inkfile now for 4.5 years in a all-in perspective, right? So the way I got in was a good friend of mine and business partner at the time, we had a graphic design company. And parlaying into the music conversation, we were working with record labels and designing all the marketing packages for some of these artists that they have, you know, album covers, tour bus, MySpaces at the time, you know, anything graphic design wise. And ironically, through a mutual friend, my business partner now at Inkfile, who brought me in, co-founder Nick, you know, he liked what he saw out there as far as one of the designs we had put out. And by way of a mutual friend, you know, I got introduced to him and we started working in a design capacity, you know, for Inkfile. And, you know, at the time, Inkfile was much smaller than it is today. And so there was, you know, ups and downs. And, you know, I started kind of building rapport, and Nick and I shared a lot of the same philosophies on business and, you know, perspective. And it was interesting for me at the time, because just like I mentioned, I was listening to podcasts and super fascinated with this world at that time. And this is back in 2009, probably. You know, we started working. Nick was open to new ideas, and I didn't have experience, but I was just kind of sharing thoughts and experience, because, you know, when you think about design and you think about user experience at that time, I didn't have any training, but a lot of it's just psychology, right? It's human behavior, human nature, kind of how people operate. And so Nick and I would collaborate on these efforts and be speaking late until the night and then into the early morning, building that rapport. So at the time, Inkfile really needed to kind of turn a corner. And so I started consulting with Nick. He asked me to help him to kind of redefine our sales funnel and our order process. And at the time, it was a big deal. I didn't realize how big of a project it was. You know, for Inkfile, you know, it was, there wasn't a lot of business coming in at the time. So it was a kind of a critical moment, but I didn't know that at the time, or there would have been more pressure. But so I started helping Nick, and we started collaborating on redefining the order process. And it really was our big swing at trying to turn a corner. And luckily enough, through the efforts and months that we put in doing that, it started to turn a corner and things started getting better and Inkfile started growing. And, you know, we kind of continued helping each other out over the course of the next few years. And it just finally got to a point where we're saying, look what we could do part-time. You know, what could we accomplish together if we were both all in? And then that's when I left Monster Energy and jumped in all in with Inkfile at the time. And that was in 2014.
That was in 2014. I don't want to get into specific numbers and ask you to be sharing numbers, but you guys have been growing pretty much consistently since 2014, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We've been steady growing year over year. Business has been growing at a healthy rate as well. So, you know, anywhere between, you know, 50 to 80% year over year. And that's both top line and bottom line. And so we really are at this point, we're focused on growth. We're a growth company. And we're just constantly trying to redefine and push the envelope to continue that growth.
Yeah. So let's talk about the funnel work that you did when you first came on. Did Inkfile have funnels in place before that? Or did you come in and tweak what was already existing? Or did you have to kind of rewrite that book?
Now, we had to rewrite the book. And I mean, you know, to be frank, this is both from Nick, who was at Inkfile and started the company, and then myself coming in and helping. You know, these are two guys that are just figuring it out as we go. He didn't have previous experience in the tech world or building an online business, and neither did I. So it's literally just two guys figuring it out. So there wasn't any specific processes in place or any sort of, you know, funnel analyzation or anything like that going on, because again, it's back in 08, 09, things are a lot more sophisticated now in terms of analytics and marketing and tools and things like that. But we were literally just figuring it out. We didn't have a lot of data to kind of drive some of the decision making. So we just figured it out as we went. And like, that's why I think I said, luckily we did something right and it started turning around. And, you know, to be frank and to be honest, I mean, we're still figuring out as we go. You know, we've been growing, and I guess, you know, part of that is intuition, which, you know, part of the strategy that we're deploying. The other half is having a phenomenal team and great team members to help. I mean, it's an understatement to say everybody's working hard, because it's beyond working hard. You know, everybody's really pushing a full plate, and we've been able to grow, but literally, we were starting to figure it out and get a little bit more pieces in place to be more strategic and more structured. But up until really recently, I mean, we just been figuring out as we go.
One of the things I love every time that we talk, you're always talking about, you know, tweaking and finding other things in that sales funnel that you missed before. I absolutely love that, because I tend to set and forget a lot of times, and I get the sense from you guys that you're always looking, always experimenting with your funnels.
Yeah. And that's a good point to touch on, because one characteristic too that Nick and I share is that we have this obsession with efficiency and process. And so, you know, tweaking it is really is really the game and that we like to play, right? So we like to be building the product. We like to be refining it. We take pride in trying to be innovative and have the best product in the industry, you know, not even as a strategy, but just more of a personality and characteristics traits. That's what we've been doing since day one, is just constantly keeping our head down, focusing on the product and making it better every single day.
Yeah, obviously having a good product helps quite a bit. And we've talked a little bit about your product privately and what it does. I mean, some of the services you guys offer are phenomenal, like the making sure things are kept up to date and having that subscription portion of it as well. People can literally not worry at all about their filings. Really cool service, because I know I had a file actually in Texas for a company of mine. And, you know, I started getting these notices. And I'll tell you, as a business owner and entrepreneur, like, you get all these things from the government all the time. You're like, I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to have to spend an afternoon trying to decipher all of this. And so you guys really come in and fill that gap, which is cool.
Yeah. And I'm sitting in the same seat as you, having prior companies to even, you know, working at Inkfile, same thing. Like, I didn't know even what a registered agent was or what a franchise tax report was for the state of Texas. Somehow I must have put myself or something down for it, but it wasn't until I got the info where I actually even understood it. And that's where I think, you know, we fill a big void in the entrepreneurial journey, is just taking care of that stuff that really no entrepreneur wants to take care of. It's not a sexy business in terms of, you know, like the way we might talk about the music industry or celebrities, but it's a fundamental core piece of running a business. If you're going to be an entrepreneur, you're going to be in business, and you're going to have to take care of these things that we offer. So we try to we streamline the process to make it easy. So we're constantly innovating to make things faster. And at the same time, we're the low cost leader in the industry. So we drive the price down. So where most people that may go to, you know, historically speaking, it's a little bit more out there now because a lot of people are comfortable with doing business online now versus 10 years ago. But it really was the kind of fundamentals where people would know that they need to have a registered agent. There's these state mandates to say you have to do these things. But, you know, like I said, it just frankly isn't fun, or people don't want to deal with it. When you're starting a business, you've got 15 hats you're wearing and you're putting out fires and you're worried about sales and doing all these other things. So we've really drove down the price as well to make it convenient and affordable, to where a lot more entrepreneurs these days, it's just part of kind of starting a business nowadays. Nowadays, it's like, okay, I know I don't want to worry about that. It's only going to cost me this much money. So let them worry about it and they can deal with it for as long as I'm in business.
Yeah, that's cool. I want to go back over to the funnel stuff and ask you kind of a basic question. What, in your opinion, make up the key elements to developing a funnel, a good sales funnel?
One is always, I mean, some of this stuff may sound rudimentary, but yeah, simplicity, right? Because in an industry like ours, where things are very technical, you got Secretary of State, you got government agencies and the IRS and, you know, a lot of formalities with these bureaucracies, that it can become intimidating and cumbersome, right? When you think about legal services in general. So, you know, us not being attorneys, for one, has kind of served and helped us in a lot of ways as well, where we are entrepreneurs ourselves, so we can put our own hat on and think about how would we want this to work. And simplicity is number one. I mean, it, you know, don't make me think is the philosophy, right? If I have to think about something, it's already too difficult, too hard. And our sales funnel isn't as fast as like selling a t-shirt. I mean, you know, you're still, even though we've simplified and streamlined it, you're still going through, you know, in some cases, depending on which package you have, you may go through 15 pages to get through the end of the funnel. So it's very important to be fast. Just ask me the basics of what we need. And in some cases, we will, you know, there'll be a back end process where we will gather additional details that may be needed. But if you front load your funnel, it's a recipe for disaster, because people get exhausted. And if you give them too many decisions, you give them too many chances to change their mind. And really, they want to get it done. That's why they came there. So if you can make it a simple process to go through and then worry about making the connection and introducing yourself and, you know, working one-on-one if need be, to solve the rest of the information gaps. But we see a lot of our competitors. I mean, it is, you know, it's very word heavy and very cumbersome to go through their sales funnel. And so we just try to, you know, streamline that.
Yeah. Keep it all simple. When you say front loaded, you mean like asking all the questions on that page one, and somebody sees this big, huge form and they have to get through that huge form with complex language.
That is one, you know, but also, I mean, front loaded just meaning the entire funnel. So if once you get to the back end of our system, if there's additional information or if there's something that's unique to your business that we may need additional information on, those are emails and conversations that we can gather afterwards. But you know, I mentioned we may have a funnel that you know could be 15 pages, but if we put everything into the funnel, they may need, you know, it could be much longer. And people don't want that. They want to get in, they want to pay, they want to have their information, know that you're taking care of it. And if you need something, let me know. But I'm already, once I click pay, it's you're handling it and I'm off to the next thing.
What are some of the tools that you use to really work and refine that funnel? I mean, it sounds like you're trying to gather some intelligence from your customers and watch their behavior to see, you know, where's the sticky points? Where are people tripping up? Do you guys use different tools to be able to collect some of that information and figure out, hey, you know what, this is just not working?
We do now. Like I said, we were just figuring it out and working a lot on intuition for years, right? It's kind of how you are when, you know, any business is focused on sales. You know, you're focused on sales and then you're focused on servicing those sales. So years go by and business grows. And, you know, at some point we're like, man, it's a lot harder to implement these processes now that the train is moving at 120 miles an hour to implement the process. So that's been an extreme challenge for us the past couple of years. But we're at the point now, to answer your question about tools, where we now have complete tracking set up for all engagement, right? So a lot of it goes through GA, but we're using a lot of different, whether it's a UTM code or whether it's an event tracking code on the website to understand where people are coming in and coming out. We're using user testing on the back end. So things like VWO, right, for user testing and constantly refining that, you know, just tinkering with every page or, you know, basically not ever being married to anything on the page. So, you know, it's kind of a philosophy where, hey, you know, just because we've stared at it so many times for so long, don't get stuck in it, right? Everything is fair game. Anything can go. And now we're using, you know, VWO and Google Analytics and a lot more tracking into Google Analytics to tell us kind of some of that data behind what's happening in there. And we just started doing live user testing as well. So besides the quantitative data, using web services that actually have live users come in that aren't familiar with your page and them going through and, you know, giving you kind of like, you know, we are with this podcast, you know, a screen recording with their, you know, they're speaking while they're going through it and giving you all the pitfalls and challenges and good things that they like and don't like about it. So marrying that quantitative data with qualitative is has really helped us in the just in this year alone.
Yeah, and just to be clear, GWO being Google Web Optimizer, I would assume, right?
Yeah, we use that as well, the Search Console, but VWO is
VWO. Okay.
I don't remember, what is it? Is it Visual Website Optimizer? VWO.com, you know, for user testing. There's other competitors for that, but that's worked for us so far.
If you can't answer this, don't feel like you have to, but how many experiments would you say that you guys run in any given month?
Not that many, you know, because we were running at least, or I should say we wanted to run, you know, 5 to 10, right, in a week and just kind of push it out. But now we're kind of having more patience, right? And so we want to get it right. So we're not being as short-sighted with it. And now we're really trying to really just run things that don't interfere. It may just be one test a week, two tests a week at the most that we're introducing, only because we want to compare apples to apples. So if we make too many variable changes, then the numbers and the statistical significance get kind of skewed. And then then assumptions come into play. So we limit it to 1 to 2 now.
All right, so you're throwing around words, statistical significance, and you're looking at biases, and you're looking at all these different assumptions that are coming into it. But you started off on this without really any background in CRO and kind of this funnel optimization. Somebody listening to this, they just bought a business, or maybe they're looking to do something similar on their own. What's a good starting point, in your opinion, for somebody that is just starting out in this area? Or maybe somebody that's intermediate and knows a little bit about it, but hasn't really seen the returns yet from kind of focusing on this continual tweaking and improvement.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I didn't know anything. coming in. So for me, literally not having friends in the industry, peers of any sort, nobody around me locally, I relied heavily on podcasts. You know, podcasts, you know, people speak freely. It's a casual environment. People want to help other people, like-minded individuals. And, you know, I've benefited tremendously from podcasting, just from learning. And of course, now with hands-on training, being working in an environment in the tech space, you're learning things every day. So one, learn by doing. Two, reach out for the resources like podcasting. And then the third thing I would say to that is, you know, when you reach a point where you can come up for air, you know, I would encourage you to try to go to different networking events and meet other individuals and just get their perspective outside of your own that they might share that maybe you wouldn't hear in a podcast. It might be more frank or direct, or they might have encountered your situation that they can actually help and give you advice for a scenario where as a podcast, it's more educational, you're listening, but you can't just jump in and ask a question, so to speak. So those are the three areas that I would focus on.
Okay, cool. I'm going to change gears completely here and spend our last 10 minutes or so. I want to talk about the growth with your company. And my experience, because I've watched a lot of companies grow, you know, people that I'm just friends with, you know, and we talk about the challenges, but then also people that I've been advising as well. And I tend to find that there's this, there are certain choke points with companies where they have troubles turning certain corners. You know, when you're first starting up a company, oftentimes that's when your revenues start hitting, you know, 250, 300,000. And then there's another choke point once you get up to about seven figures and trying to get up to the higher seven figure range, so on and so forth. What's been your experience? You came on at a critical point with this company, you know, when you guys weren't really sure about the future, and then you've been able to grow it since. What has been your experience with some of these choke points within the company's growth, the company's culture? I guess I should probably ask instead of assuming, I mean, have you guys experienced that?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because, and this is a great topic when we should spend some time on this. As an entrepreneur or as a small business owner of a startup or a small company, and I kind of am speaking more in the vein of like bootstrapping because we've been self-funded from the beginning. We've never taken any rounds or funding. So I don't have experience to speak on there. But as far as doing it yourself, one thing I can say is focusing on, or I used to think that hiring people, right, is going to solve your problems, right? And it does, that comes into play later, but it comes in very strategically later. But what I figured out was that, like, for example, our biggest advantages, right, when we were smaller, became our biggest challenges as we tried to turn corners, you know, and I'll elaborate a little bit on that. And so, for example, you know, in our industry, we were bootstrapped, we're a small team, we're still a small team, we're competing side by side companies that are, you know, Goliaths in the industry that have either been acquired or have raised funds and are billion-dollar companies, you know, and we're competing with these guys directly, and we're a very small team. So, you know, we're probably 15 people in our office and then, you know, additional people in terms of remote resources outside of that. But what I'm getting at is that that worked to our advantage when we were small. So when you think about it, we were able to think about it and have a conversation today, and then we could start building it tomorrow. And we could, you know, we're very efficient and we push and we work hard. So we could roll things out at a tremendous speed. And that kind of led to some of the innovation that we now have that's really industry leading now at this point, because we were small and we could move fast. You know, we're still small, but now that we've grown in size, it's you face new challenges, right? And so the challenge for us now is now it's our disadvantage being this small, because now we need to accelerate growth beyond where we are. And our capacity is limited in terms of what, you know, our team can do beyond what they're doing now. Because as I mentioned earlier, everybody's pushing, everybody's already at capacity. And so even though, you know, you feel like conceptually, okay, well, we're managing the advertising, so to speak, right? All the PPC and all that stuff. It's been self-managed all the way up until this year. You know, we had to bring on a team to help manage that. We've had to bring on team members to help us in different areas from, you know, SEO, content marketing. We've expanded our dev team. So these are things that we're doing now to help turn the corner. But what you realize is that you can keep iterating and moving, but when you're smaller, you can solve problems quickly because the problems you have are generally something that can be solved quickly. When you grow, the challenges become not overnight fixes. So, you know, you're going to spend a longer time fixing it. And then for your growth, you know, there's a reason why not everybody grows to be, you know, giant companies is because it gets harder, it doesn't get easier. And so what we've realized too is, you know, we could see an opportunity and seize it and go, you know, take that hill, so to speak. And then we experience growth, or we open up a new channel and we experience growth. You know, where we are now is, you know, we actually have to have strategy and team to forecast ahead 6 months or more so we can invest in that today and then experience that growth, hopefully 6 months, 12 months from now. You know, so that's one area that, you know, we've certainly, you know, ran into a wall on and had to figure out how to maneuver around it. Because, you know, you get used to thinking that your core strength and your competitive advantage is always your competitive advantage. So at some point, you got to always be objective and look in the mirror and say, wait a second, is that now our Achilles heel? Is this now the one thing that's holding us back? Maybe it's not so great. I used to think that was like what we hang our hat on. But now you really got to think how to move forward, and you have to remain objective about it.
Why do you think that is? I mean, why do you think that as companies grow, and this sounds actually, by the way, very similar to the same conversation I had with Rob Walling from Drip, you know, because they were the same sort of environment, a few devs working together, and they had an idea for something. They rolled it out, coded it out, pushed out within a day, and that was it. You know, they were able to do that. And then as they grew, same sort of challenges. Why do you think that is, that as you grow, it's not as easy to just flip out new solutions? Is it because there's more people involved, or is it because the growth and the changes that you need to make are more sophisticated? Or, I mean, what's going on there?
I think it's competition, right? Because once you kind of turn corners or try to go to a next level, you know, it's a new game. You know, you're playing against different competitors, and you know, their strengths and what they do best and why they were in the top positions that you're taking market share away from is because they're doing something really well. And so you have to be able to then compete directly with them and do what they did well and take market share from them. So you have to constantly evolve. It's not just internally what's happening, but just in the industry for competition. You know, nothing in business is just stand still. So you're either gaining ground or losing ground. And when you reach, you know, new heights or next levels, the competition gets more fierce, and you have to have even deeper strategies. You have to be thinking future. You have to have more of a focus, you know, because we could cover a lot of ground in a lot of places and grow, but it might be more short-sighted, right? It might be just low-hanging fruit, and we're capturing that. But at some point, you're going to run out of low-hanging fruit. And so once you run out of low-hanging fruit, it becomes all about strategy and long-term strategy, because you have to build things that are scalable, and you have to compete against these guys in the course of 6 to 12 months and beyond. So it really takes a different mindset to turn the corners. I mean, you can operate in the same manner as the same culture and the same type of people and teammates, but the game and the rules become more fierce.
You said something a little bit ago about you used to think that to scale, you just hired or something to that effect. But then you kind of learned that that wasn't the case. And why is that? I mean, obviously you need to hire to scale at some point, right?
Yeah. But I think a lot of people try to scale too fast. And some people can do it, and some people are that experienced and they can pull it off. For us, it, you know, we could have hired earlier, and we potentially could have got further faster, right? We were reluctant to hire rapidly because we knew we were growing, but we didn't want to take the growth for granted, expecting the growth to come. So we would make sure that we had the business, capture the business, and then when the need was dire, we would bring somebody in. But, you know, honestly, if we would have brought somebody in and forecasted it 6 months in advance, you know, we might have been able to keep momentum going faster. But looking back in hindsight, I do think there was some benefits of not hiring faster because, again, we focused on product and we focused on our customers. And so the product was constantly improving And essentially, when you think about scaling, what are you really scaling, right? You've got to have a strong foundation to scale or build on top of. So not hiring people at that time, I mean, you know, the last several of years and the investments we've made, and, you know, we weren't in our industry, we were known, but outside our industry, it's not like we were flying on anybody's radar, right? And that's because we had our head down and we were just building product. And now that the product and the machine and so on is really strong in terms of foundation, now we're hiring rapidly in a sense, right? We're really trying to accelerate it and bring on very strategic hires to fill specific niches or voids that we need to fill in terms of areas of expertise. And so it's working for us now in terms of hiring. So you're right, you have to hire to scale. But at the same time, if we wouldn't have focused so much on the product and building the foundation that is, you know, everything innovative and automated that we have, it could be the death of us, right? You could grow too fast. And then if the machine doesn't work, I mean, you got sizable problems when you're talking about thousands of users and thousands of people on your platform. It's not just, you know, two people calling you saying, hey, I got, you're talking about your phone's ringing, you know, by the thousands and people trying to, trying to get those needs resolved.
That's fascinating. With culture and when you're growing a company like that and you're bringing on people and hiring quickly after a certain amount of time, because you need to be able to support that growth. Have you guys been able to keep that kind of grinder spirit that you seem to exude with every time I talk to you? You know, it's that classic entrepreneur hustle. Have you been able to keep that culture with your company?
We have. So that's a big deal for us too, right? I mean, the people you work alongside with and the people that you and trust in helping to make decisions and contribute, they kind of have to be in line with your philosophy and with the rest of the team. Otherwise, there's friction between team or there's conflicts of philosophies. And it's a lot easier if there's a culture fit to be able to rally everybody together for the common good and push forward. So in a lot of ways, you know, in our case, you know, we certainly want people who are capable. But if we had a scale of 1 to 10 and the most talented person was a 10, we would still rather work with 8 and him come onto the team, outwork everybody, fit with the culture. And then we're not going to have the kind of pitfalls or speed bumps that, you know, we may have if we had friction with somebody. So we definitely identify and work better with those type of folks. And at the same time, I think they appreciate that about us as well. Because depending on what environment they came from, if they have the same spirit or, you know, they're a fit for our culture, generally it's a place they like to work and, you know, with an environment and people that they want to invest their time with. Right. So I think that's been huge for us. And up until this point, it's worked. And as we continue to scale and grow, it becomes more of a challenge to try to keep everybody in the same culture fit. But it's important to hire slow and make sure you get the right people than to hire fast and then be reverse engineering that and figuring out how to let them go and get somebody else in. It's counterproductive.
Right, right. We've gone a little bit over time, but mainly because this has been a fascinating conversation. So any last bits that you would want to put in, or if anyone wants to reach out to you, are they able to do so?
Yeah, absolutely. My email address is Ray, R-A-Y at inkfile.com. You know, I'm on LinkedIn, Facebook. My name is Dustin Ray. Or my handle on Instagram or anywhere else would be D-Ray Online. But if I was going to leave any other nugget of information with folks, just from our experience or my experience, the one thing that people kind of find interesting, but I think is very important, is that a lot of people in our society try to focus on self-improvement, right? We all work on self-improvement. But I think it kind of gets lost in transition with entrepreneurs because we're builders and we want to improve, but society kind of teaches us in a way to work on our weaknesses, right? If you're already good at something, don't worry about that. You got to worry what you're not good at, improve in that area. And really just through experience, life, not just business, I kind of think it's more important to focus on your strengths, right? As far as self-improvement and be self-aware to say, this is the area that I'm good at. Let me build team, fill gaps, and bring on people to help me execute whatever the task at hand is. But I think too many people focus on improving on what they're not good at. Like, for example, we ran a graphic design business for a while. okay, I was interested in design. I like design. You know, if I sat there and invested my time into, you know, getting better at design and using Photoshop, yeah, I'm going to improve. I'm going to get better. But it's always, but at the end of the day, my best is going to be mediocre. So I'm never going to be able to compete with the guy who is a phenomenal designer. So rather than focusing on your weaknesses just to be mediocre at them, I think you got to double down on your strengths, be self-aware, know what you're good at. And I think it kind of encompasses more of a positive mindset when you're focusing with confidence on what you're good at. You know, even when you're trying to improve on what you're not good at, it's kind of a negative feeling, right? It's kind of, you know you're not good at it and you kind of get down about it because that's human nature. But if you, you know, the entrepreneur journey is tough. So if you focus on your strengths and bring people on to help you where you need, I think you can get further faster.
Well, don't tell my kids that, because I keep telling them to work on the stuff that they're struggling in school. But I think when you're applying it where you're applying it, you're 100% right. You know,
yeah. Your kids, they're learning, right? So they don't know exactly what they're good at or what they're not. So I do the same for my kids.
Right.
You're teaching them to work through problems, right? More problem solving than self-improvement at this point.
Right, exactly. And also, you know, if you want to become an all-around good person, work on, you know, find those things. But you're right as far as with your business and entrepreneurs, and we see this with buyers all the time, right? Buyers that just kill it are the buyers who come in and they know their strength. They might be CRO gurus. They might be SEO gurus. They might be really, really good at just setting up operations. Oh, you know, what have you. And they look for the businesses that are deficient in those areas so that they can take them. And those are the guys that come back with 2X, 3X, 5X businesses in a few years because they've taken their strength and they're not going to bother trying to work on the stuff that they're bad at. They're going to outsource that if they have to, make sure somebody else is taking care of it. And they won't deal with it. And it works. So
that's so true. I gave up, Mark. I gave up on trying to be smarter. I said, you know what? I'm going to self-improve, but I'm not going to get any smarter. So now I tend to focus more about, I try to focus more of my time on becoming a better leader than trying to get smarter, right? And so you can only build a company so big on your own. So if you want to get smarter, you're only going to get so big. You're going to have to work with more people and bring in people to grow a sizable company. So, you know, for myself today, I try to focus on being a better leader and working with people and empowering them to be the smartest person in the room, right? Because their expertise, their areas of expertise, they're always going to be smarter and better than I would be in that space. So I just try to focus on becoming a better leader, and I gave up on trying to be smart.
I love it. That sounds like a great way to end this episode here of the podcast. Thank you so much for coming on. This has been awesome.
Now, I can't thank you enough for inviting me. I hope your audience gets something from it, and looking forward to catching up with you soon.
Sounds good.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Quiet Light Podcast. For more resources from this episode, head over to quietlightbrokerage.com. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a rating and review in iTunes. This helps share the messages from the show with more business owners like you.